exam two, what you're going to want to remember as you prepare for exam two is your solid foundation on module one. So you're going to need to know cell structure. You're going to need to know how the four major biological macromolecules are incorporated into that structure and how that structure differs between prokaryotes and eukaryotes. So you're going to synthesize all of that information you retained from module one into your understanding of the energy cycle. The overarching theme of module two is the energy cycle. And life as we know it on the surface of the earth would not exist without this energy cycle. We begin our focus in chapter five with how the structure of the plasma membrane allows for some materials to pass through and others not to. So those phospholipids line up tail to tail to make that primary component of the plasma membrane. This happens because of the location of electrons within that molecule. When they are found in nature without any energy investment at all, they naturally line up tail to tail. They form the primary component of the membrane, which is studded with proteins. So there are going to be all kinds of proteins embedded in this membrane. Some pass all the way through. Some are floating on the surface. And we remember nothing about this membrane is rigid. It is semi-permeable. Some things pass through. When things can pass through for free, we call that passive transport. Things move down the concentration gradient naturally. That means with no energy required. For free. They move naturally from areas of high concentration to areas of low concentration. That's down a concentration gradient. The movement of water is so important that it has its own science vocabulary word. That's osmosis. We know that water is very important to all life, and all cells must be able to maintain a balanced water volume. This is referred to balance as an isotonic condition. So you're going to want to understand the variations. If something is not isotonic, it's either hypotonic, swollen with water, or hypertonic, dehydrated and shriveled. So diffusion is always going to move these molecules for free from high to low, especially if they're not charged. That'll remind you of like making Kool-Aid or something, how just one drop of color will spread out throughout an entire solution. This is what happens for all small uncharged molecules. Okay, the diffusion that can happen across a membrane, that means just through the phospholipid molecules, that is simple diffusion. Oxygen does that to get in our cells. The kind that requires a protein to be present in the membrane to pass through, those proteins will form like little tunnels. And the best example we talk about is the aquaporin. The aquaporin will make a little tunnel and large amounts of water can pass through there for free. So you need to understand those three different types: simple diffusion, facilitated diffusion, osmosis. You need to understand those as passive. And the other type is active. Active requires ATP. So active transport cannot happen without ATP energy and the presence of a membrane protein. The most famous kind that we study in our course is the sodium-potassium pump. These are very important to life as we know it because they can move items across the concentration gradient in the opposite way, meaning from high concentration, from low concentration areas to high. So it doesn't happen naturally. It happens against the gradient. The sodium potassium pump is our best example. The other kind of transport we talk about briefly is bulk transport. The best example is endocytosis, which includes phagocytosis. In our lab, there's a video about this, and that is used by the cells of your immune system. It's sometimes called, like, the root word phagocytosis means cellular eating, so the cells of our immune system can consume invaders. And we need to remember all of that and be able to apply it from chapter five. Chapter six takes a look at metabolism. In science, metabolism is the sum of all of a cell's reactions, okay? all of the reactions. So some reactions in your cells build up molecules. Those are anabolic reactions. Some reactions tear molecules down. Those are catabolic reactions. They also involve two different types of energy. So potential energy is described as physicists as something that is stored. We think about somebody on a bicycle, just sitting on their bicycle, sitting on the top of the hill. That chemical energy that is stored is potential energy. The same for me as if I have food in my cabinet. That is energy in the form of calories that's just being stored. But once that bicycle person starts moving down the hill, to coast down the hill, they're in the kinetic energy, the energy of movement. Once I take that food out of the cabinet and I swallow that food, then I know that I am going to be using it. It'll be the energy of movement, kinetic energy. The two laws of thermodynamics are going to oversee all of the energy cycle, and you need to be able to know the two laws and apply them. The first law, energy can be neither created nor destroyed. In any closed system, energy can only be transformed. The second law is regarding entropy. Entropy is the science word for disorder. In all systems, entropy is increasing. So when we think about the energy cycle, the evidence for this is that heat is being lost in small amounts in all reactions. Entropy is always increasing. And our vocabulary word that relates to this is the calorie. The calorie is the amount of energy required to raise 1 gram of water by 1 degree Celsius. So these energy transformations occur in your cells because of electrons. Oxidation reduction reactions are referenced in your textbook. Sometimes the shorthand word for that is redux. That word is used. And all that means is the transfer of an electron. And the way our bodies transfer electrons is through a complex series of processes that is described in Chapter 7. We remember ATP is the primary energy currency of the cell. And the reason why is because ATP means 3-phosphates. That's what the TP means, 3-phosphates. That potential energy is stored in that last phosphate bond. And that is what powers our proteins in our cells to do the work. So whether that's moving a molecule, building a molecule, getting rid of waste, whatever our cells need to do, so proteins do the work and ATP provide the energy to power those machines. One of the primary jobs of a protein is to act as an enzyme. So many proteins have the property of being an enzyme. These are going to involve lowering activation energy. They require less ATP than if this reaction just occurred naturally over time. They are not going to be consumed in reaction. As proteins, they are affected by temperature, pH, and other factors in the environment. Enzymes, as a class of molecules, are necessary to all life as we know it, primarily because they drive cellular respiration, not just in our life, but in all complex life forms on the surface of the earth. We know that on the surface of the earth, we're transitioning to Chapter 7, cellular respiration occurs in living organisms. So in general, animals are the ones that are net consumers of oxygen. So every time we breathe, we're taking it in, and when we exhale, we're exhaling carbon dioxide. Plants do the opposite. Plants consume oxygen, consume carbon dioxide and release the oxygen as waste as part of photosynthesis. Cellular respiration is dozens of those redux reactions, dozens of those electron transfers, okay? Those are going to carry energy from one molecule to another because energy is not created or destroyed, it's just transformed. This process powers the conversion of glucose to ATP energy. So how is glucose converted? It's a very complicated process that involves three main pathways. The first process is glycolysis. It happens in the cytoplasm. It converts that 6-carbon glucose into 2-3-carbon pyruvate molecules. That process requires 2 ATP. It yields 4 ATP, and it gives us an overall net gain of 2 ATP. The next phase is the Krebs cycle, also known as the citric acid cycle. That part of the cycle happens in the matrix of the mitochondria. When it's finished, the acetyl-CoA that enters is going to be converted to citric acid. In the third step, after citric acid cycle is completed, is the electron transfer
support chain, and that is embedded in the inner membrane of the mitochondria. That process involves proton pumps. Those are those hydrogen ions that power ATP production through ATP synthase. When those pumps come through the membrane, they leave to form water when oxygen is available. So this entire process happens when oxygen is present, and the science name for that is aerobic respiration, because oxygen is the final electron acceptor. The mitochondria become the site where the most ATP are produced. Most of the reactions, those are enzyme reactions involved with cellular respiration, happen inside the mitochondria. Most enzymes span that inner membrane and catalyze those reactions. They happen in order. The only one of the three main processes that happens in all living things is glycolysis, because glycolysis can occur with or without oxygen. It gives a net gain of 2 ATP molecules to pyruvate, and it is the only process we talk about that doesn't require oxygen in this chapter. When one glucose enters aerobic cellular respiration in our cells, we get about 36 ATP. We say about, we can't know exactly, because sometimes the membrane leaks, sometimes the energy is used to do something besides form an ATP, and always in all reactions, some heat is lost. Glucose and carbohydrates are not the only energy source for our cells, but they are the best energy source for our cells. So in terms of cellular energy, glucose to ATP is like the energy lottery. But our body can also use protein and fat as an energy source. So if there's not oxygen, what happens? Cells can enter another pathway called fermentation. Okay, so there is alcoholic fermentation, and that is when pyruvate produces ethanol, carbon dioxide, and a whole lot less ATP than we get from good cellular respiration. And this is what traditionally happens in a yeast cell or a bacteria cell. In my cells, if I exercise past the point of oxygen consumption, that's when my muscles start to feel the burn, and that is lactic acid fermentation. So there are lots of caveats within these metabolic processes for alternative pathways, and you need to be familiar with those. So the other half of the energy cycle is photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is what forms the energy cycle with respiration, because energy for everything on Earth ultimately comes from the sun. In photosynthesis, plants are going to use carbon dioxide, the energy of sunlight, and they are going to be able to produce glucose. The reactants for photosynthesis are carbon dioxide and water. The products are glucose and oxygen. Without photosynthesis, plants and animals could not live on the surface of the earth. Photosynthesis depends on sunlight, particularly the units of light called photons. The chloroplast is the site of photosynthesis. That's where it happens. That's found in the chloroplast of a plant. It happens in a membrane that is embedded with chlorophyll. So the organelle is the chloroplast. The molecule that facilitates photosynthesis is called chlorophyll, and it's what makes the chloroplast green. It has a very complex structure with a ring built inside, okay? So if you look at the drawing of chlorophyll, you'll see it's made out of chomp plus magnesium. There's a magnesium ion embedded in the center of the ring structure. Photons from sunlight hit that magnesium and excite the electrons in that ring. That powers the entire process. So as that happens, the water molecule can be broken into its component parts, and the series of reactions required to happen will happen. There will need to be gas exchange. So carbon dioxide needs to get into the cell, and oxygen needs to be able to get out of the cell. And that happens through the stomata. Those are tiny little openings in the bottom of the leaf that allow carbon dioxide to get in and oxygen to get out. The pigment molecule chlorophyll is embedded in a special membrane called the thylakoid membrane. You're going to want to remember that. All of the reactions of photosynthesis are divided into two parts, the light reactions and the Calvin cycle. The light reactions are the first series of reactions. They produce ATP, and oxygen is produced as a waste product. So as oxygen is produced, it goes right back out the leaf through the stomata. The ATP that's made in the light reaction goes on to power the Calvin cycle. The carbon reactions that are going to happen there are extremely complicated. When the Calvin cycle begins, carbon dioxide is converted in a series of multiple enzyme reactions to produce glucose. So photosynthesis is going to consume carbon dioxide and produce oxygen, and cellular respiration, what we talked about in chapter 7, when there's oxygen present, it does the opposite, and this forms the energy cycle. Chapter 9 is just an overview of all cell signals that govern metabolism. Okay, so there's four basic types of signals. The autocrine signal is when a cell will make a signal to signal itself. This is very famous for happening in developing embryos or when somebody has a viral infection, pain, or inflammation. Cells also need to be able to signal across to their neighbors. So there are special structures inside many cells that are like little ditches. And the cell can signal its next door neighbor only with this physical signal. It's a very small channel, so proteins or DNA cannot get across. It's a really quick and easy way for a cell to send a signal to its neighbor. But paracrine signals can signal a neighbor at a short distance. Okay, not a great distance, but a short distance. And these are most famously used by nerve cells. So nerve cells will build specific molecules to signal their neighbors at a short distance. Enzymes are present in the system to consume those when they're through being used because we don't want any of those to build up in our system. And the last kind of signal is the endocrine signal. It can signal anything far away in your body, and it's famously described as a hormone. These are the signals used by your thyroid and your pituitary. They're a slow signal, but they last a lot longer.